relatively short cabinet today because of the meetings with the Singapore Prime Minister. We have agreed to the issue of a discussion document on proposed changes with respect to general and limited partnerships and tax law. It's responsibility of the Ministers of Finance and Revenue. Also agreed that there should be an insertion in patents legislation for experimental use exceptions. There is a patents bill due for introduction later this year, replacing the Patents Act 1953. Now, with respect to the Charities Register, decisions around the implementation of that, with the initial registration period now going to extend until the 30th of June 2008. Coming up in the House this week, it's a week of 3 days of government business. The aim will be to complete 3/3 readings. The Local Government Law Reform Bill, the Housing Restructuring and Tenancy Matters Information Matching Amendment Bill, and the New Zealand Superannuation and Retirement Income Amendment Bill, or Pensions Amendment Bill, etc. Coming up this week, obviously a lot of focus on the International Whaling Commission meeting in St Kitts, which I'll say a word about in a moment. Other visitors this week, we have the Chinese Assistant Foreign Minister in town, meeting with St Peter's tomorrow. Jim Anderton will be going down to Nelson to look at where the Varroa outbreak has apparently arisen. Three recently important stats issues this week. External migration on Wednesday, March quarter balance of payments Thursday, and the GDP figure for the March quarter on Friday. Come Thursday, I will be opening the new Auckland Women's Prison, and come Friday, opening the Winter Festival in Queenstown. Any questions? Oh, come to Wailing first. Wailing. Obviously very disappointed with the vote on the declaration. It's not a resolution of the International Whaling Commission, but it is a declaration, and it received a majority of one vote with one abstention. It does mean we cannot count on whales being safe for the future. On the other hand, it does not mean that commercial whaling is about to resume. It's a rather higher test for that. Clearly, Japan has won on one issue, while it lost on three issues. Some Pacific countries abstained once or twice, others voted with Japan. The actual declaration itself is certainly far from any normal declaration one would expect from an international meeting. There were suggestions that it would be a non-controversial consensus text, but the draft which has been narrowly passed is a very hard line pro-whaling statement, with statements in it which we would reject as utterly untenable on any factual basis, such as the amount of fish which whales eat being a threat to the fish populations. So it is disappointing, but as I say, it's one vote out of four, where the pro-whaling lobby did manage to get a very narrow majority, and no doubt the debate will go on.
Are you disappointed
with our fellow Pacific countries for engaging in the fight, or are they engaging in the fight, or are they disappointed to get there?
It's well known that Japan has spread a lot of money around small and poor
developing countries, and that has clearly been instrumental in getting its support.
Does this mean the IWC now lacks credibility? If that's possible to
them? Certainly one cannot think of any other international organisation which operates in this way. It is, as I say, disappointing. But I don't think we should give up on it. I think we have to keep advancing the substantial arguments which we have for a conservation approach to whales.
What implications will it have if Japan looks to break away from the IWC?
That's threatened from time to time. It hasn't happened. They'll probably be bored by winning one vote out of four, albeit by a narrow majority. One would hope that over time Japan might reflect on the damage this is doing to relationships around the world. It really is quite unfortunate the way the issue's played out.
Well, the New Zealand government now be saying to some of those Pacific nations, I'm thinking in particular of the Solomons, where we've helped with the Ramsey Force and we've done a lot of work on educational aid.
Indeed we have, and of course the Solomons did abstain on two votes, so it didn't take a hardline position on all the issues which Japan was expecting. Those that supported to vote on. Kiribati also abstained on one vote, but clearly it is a disappointment. With respect to the other countries, Tuvalu took a very strong pro-Japan position, as did three Micronesian countries, Palau, Marshall Islands and Nauru, with whom we traditionally have less contact, but nonetheless they're all Pacific Island Forum members. It has proved very difficult in recent years to continue to get strong support in the Pacific Island Forum for a whale conservation position, precisely because the Japanese advocacy has eaten into the Pacific.
So we've just been expressing a disappointment. You won't be saying, hey, come on guys, we're giving you aid, we've helped you, it's time that you supported us on some of these issues?
We have an interest in the long-term friendly relationship with the Pacific, so we've certainly been expressing our sadness at what has happened and continue to put forward arguments that whales shouldn't be hunted in the modern age, and also the evidence that many countries, including our own, have found that whale conservation actually enables whale watching ecotourism, which is a fast-growing part of the world tourism industry. So if you're into whale hunting, then you are, in a sense, killing the goose that lays the golden egg for sustainable ecotourism.
But you won't tie aid to it?
We haven't tied aid. Tying aid is the worst possible aid practice. It is simply not tenable practice, and it's not something we will do.
Did we have any role in getting the people to stay in Ireland and vote?
I'm sure that before each of these votes there was a lot of discussion. The New Zealand delegation's been very, very active on the ground, and I'm grateful to the two Pacific countries that did abstain on, in one case once, in the other case twice. I think that indicates a certain amount of goodwill and a willingness to go into dialogue on the issue.
Is there any avenue where we can challenge that Japanese practice of flying boats, either through the IWC or the UN? Is there any way we're able to say they're tying aid to support for this issue?
Aid best practice is generally enunciated through the Development Assistance Committee of the OECD, and no reading of what it promulgates could sanction a practice like this. That's why I say that in time one hopes that Japan will reflect on the damage to its reputation of the practices it is engaging in to try to get its way on the issue.
But are we able to bring any pressure?
I think it's a moral pressure. I think it's a moral pressure from countries like our own and others who do engage in aid best practice, not worst practice, and also the pressure that will come from intense media and public scrutiny. Environmental NGOs are very, very active. I find it interesting that in the declaration that was passed, there was actually a condemnation of NGOs, which suggests a certain undemocratic approach, if you like. We expect NGOs, or civil society, as they're sometimes called, to play a part in the life of our society and the life of many societies. So the fact that they're singled out for criticism, I think, is in itself interesting.
But Japan has been singled out for international condemnation and criticism in a number of campaigns, and it hasn't made any difference, and they don't really seem to heed the international criticism, or it doesn't seem to make a difference to the way they proceed.
We live in the hope that one day a Japanese government will re-examine these positions. It's not a tenable position when you can't shift the stocks of whale meat off the shelves in supermarkets of Japan. It's not a tenable position when you have to, in effect, apply very large amounts of money to get support. And even then, and after so much effort, and after many years, narrowly winning one vote out of four, is this really worth the international opprobrium which Japan attracts?
Why do you think Japan is pursuing this when the consumption of Huawei in Japan is falling?
This is very hard to explain, but one could probably put it down to the role of certain electorates with ports where the whaling fleet goes out from, which may be in a strategic position in the ruling party.
Will there be any other kind of pressure applied? I mean, apart from what's happening around the IWC, is the New Zealand government going to send to the Japanese government any kind of message about what it thinks of this?
This has been raised by New Zealand government representatives with Japan over a very, very, very long time. I think I'm right in recalling that we have been a part of taking a démarche to the Gaimusha, the Japanese Foreign Ministry, on occasions in the past on the issue. So no doubt those sort of representations at government and diplomatic level will continue. And as I say, in the hope that one day the Japanese government will evaluate that the opprobrium that attaches to this kind of behaviour simply isn't worth it.
The Greens have suggested that there should be some sort of international investigation into the link between Japan's aid program and the voting. Would you support that, or could you think of a forum where that could be done?
Well, I'm not sure how that could be done. I'm not sure what the auspices would be. But I think the evidence is pretty clear that a lot of small and poor countries are assisted to become members and to get there and have their aid supplemented.
Is it just Japan that's driving this, or are there other pro-way countries?
Japan has been on the forefront. Norway, which is also in every other respect a very, very, very good friend, has also advocated doing away with the moratorium on commercial whaling, as has Iceland.
And do we suspect them of any dodgy practices?
No. In fact, Norway would be known worldwide for not only being extremely generous with development assistance, but applying good practice. I've never heard any suggestion of misuse of its development assistance budget.
So
the likes of
Kiribati
and Tuvalu, are they a lost course now, or are we going to up our assistance with regards to pro-conservation and education?
Yes.
We have some small development assistance projects for both, which are aimed at ecotourism, and we would like to keep working with them on the benefits of sustainable ecotourism around whaling rather than having unsustainable practices. As I say, Kiribati did abstain on one motion, so that indicates there's still a basis for dialogue.
Prime Minister, the former Indian ambassador, Mr. Dogra, is trying to leave the country, and he's left essentially complaining, or he's of the view that the New Zealand government initiated the process or complained to the Indian government that led to him losing his accreditation. Any view on that?
I wouldn't think there's any substance to that whatsoever. The Indian government made its own decisions with respect to Mr. Dogra.
You didn't have any frustrations with the way the Indian representatives here overall, including the staff below Dogra, were working, particularly with visa processing?
Well, personally, no. I went to India. My visa was processed. Mr. Dogra was the High Commissioner who came and was part of the whole visit program, so I personally have no complaints at all. However, I do represent a part of Auckland with many Indian communities and active associations, and it's fair to say that one would have to be deaf if one had not heard complaints about delays in visa processing for Indian Kiwis going to India.
And in terms of Dogra and New Zealand, would you ever expect him or his family to return back here?
I don't know. They would have to apply for a visa in the normal way like anybody else. It's fair to stress that Mr. Dogra throughout has been treated as anybody in such a situation would have been treated.
So had he applied to stay and been turned down, or did he just give up and go home?
My impression is that he has voluntarily gone home.
There's a forecast for more snow coming down south. Are you happy with the way that civil defence has handled the weather problems, and also in light of Canterbury's handling as well?
Yes, I am, and I have taken the trouble to check before coming down today to see how the relationship between the Ministry of Civil Defence and Canterbury Regional Civil Defence and Emergency Management has been working, and I'm told that the two have been working well together. The government has gone beyond what was ever asked of it with respect to supporting the region. Military were put on standby, were then brought into operation with trucks, personnel, helicopters. Generators have been supplied. There's been very, very close liaison, and I'm satisfied that it's been handled appropriately.
Well, you can see that they didn't ask for the help early enough, though, for Canterbury.
I believe they handled it as they saw fit. Now, we are there to help. We have an army camp in Burnham. It was put on standby. The Minister and Air Marshal Ferguson went to Christchurch last Thursday morning to ensure that our offer to help could be picked up because we were there and waiting. But overall, I think Canterbury has handled this well. It has been a very severe weather event, and so some people have been without power for quite a long time. But I believe that the authorities have handled it as best they could.
The forecast over the next week or so is for more snow. Have you had any advice or any concerns expressed to you about the impact of further snow?
There was, of course, concern about what might happen yesterday, today. That, to the best of my knowledge, hasn't been as bad as it could have been, but of course there are more fronts coming. So I think it just heightens the need for the civil defence in the regions concerned and the ministry to be closely liaison, and anything we can do, we will do.
Prime Minister, when you met with Prime Minister Lee, did you raise any freedom of speech issues that clearly Singapore was top?
No, I didn't, as I said at the press conference.
Yeah, why not, given that the Leader of the Opposition is appearing in court there tomorrow for not having a permit to speak, or speaking without a permit?
Well, it's pretty obvious that Singapore runs in a way that wouldn't be acceptable to New Zealand. But I haven't raised that specific issue with them. Presumably they have a law of the land, they have constitutional processes, those are what's operating.
So would we see it as interfering in their domestic politics if we raise that issue?
We do, of course, raise human rights issues, but at this point that hasn't moved into that category.
Have you raised other human rights issues with them, and also as well?
No, I haven't raised other issues with them.
Did you speak about East Timor contribution from Singapore?
Yes, we did talk about East Timor. The Prime Minister made it clear that should the UN want to mobilise again to get contributions for a force or for more relief for Timor, that Singapore would look favourably at considering that.
The Greens say that, you know, we have in New Zealand, there's a duty, the New Zealand government has a duty to raise issues of human rights abuse, you know, with leaders of visiting countries. I mean, why would you not do that?
Well, I think it's a question of what the threshold for that is. We always raise arbitrary arrest, detention, gross abuses, but I don't have a brief that Singapore's crossed that particular threshold.
Isn't freedom of speech, though, a human right?
It's important to us, and it may well be that Singapore has a constitution that upholds it, but they will also have laws which presumably their prosecution feels that someone has overstepped. I don't have any brief that suggests that I should be raising that at this time.
Trevor Mallard on the agenda expressed interest in the finance minister's job. Did you find that an interesting sort of revelation from him?
Well, firstly, I didn't see agenda. Secondly, I've seen, now heard second-hand reports of it. I think ambition's a wonderful thing.
Would you support him in that role?
Well, I'm not about to pick the next finance minister because I'm very happy with the one I have.
The same applies to somebody being interested in the Prime Minister's job.
Absolutely.
The NZNO has come out today wanting a wider inquiry into the aged care health sector. They want the Focus 2000 inquiry widened. What's your position?
Well, my understanding is that Focus 2000 is disability organisation focusing on cerebral palsy sufferers, so I'm not quite sure how that's spilled over into aged care. The government is running hard to keep up with demand for aged care services. At a time of low unemployment, it's not easy to get workers. Workers aren't particularly well paid. Notwithstanding that, Australian corporate chains have found it very profitable to enter the aged care market. So some of that money doesn't seem to be getting through. So there are issues in the aged care sector, but whether they be advanced or addressed in any way by holding an inquiry, I'd be a bit doubtful.
Dr. Cullen last week backed up Dr. Bollard's call for a wage restraint so that workers didn't seek to get compensation for inflation. Yet you seem to have a system where politicians are exempt from that kind of restraint.
Well, firstly, I think Dr. Cullen would be very mindful of the headline that would have occurred if he hadn't backed Dr. Bollard. Cullen contradicts Bollard, says ignore Bollard's call for a restraint on wages. I mean, it's a no-win question. The reality is that Dr. Bollard is trying to manage inflation, which has gone a little outside the band that he's given, but he's also asked to take a medium-term view, and that's what he's doing, and I think that's good for monetary policy. I think with respect to wage rounds this year, with a focus on productivity, would be a very good thing.
But all I'm saying is that we've got ourselves into a situation, haven't we, where politicians inevitably are asked to make hypocritical statements because their own wage increases often, almost always, outstrip inflation.
Remember, we don't negotiate our wages. We are at the receiving end of determinations by the Remuneration Authority, and it would be many years since the submission was made by parliamentarians.
Have you had any word on the Noel Ingram inquiry?
No word.
Did you get a paper about toll and rail infrastructure?
No.